We are gathered as practical people to work on practical problems at this meeting. We are here to plan ahead, but this being 21st century Indiana, ahead isn't very far off, as John just said, and as I want to elaborate here, we need to move quickly from the realm of the abstract to the real and coming to grips with the challenges, but really, as we see it, the magnificent opportunities of the green energy, clean energy era. We Hoosiers, for the benefit of our many out-of-state guests, we are people who attempt to plan ahead. We are measure twice, cut once types. I've always loved the story of the elderly golfers, married couple, avid golfers. One reflective evening, the wife says, if I passed away first, would you continue to live here in our house? And the husband says, well, honey, it's the only home we've got. And I'm sentimental about it. Moments later, she said, would you get remarried? And he said, well, it'd get lonely. I suppose I might. Moments later, would you two sleep in the bed that we've always shared? And the husband said, well, it's family heirloom. I suppose I'd keep it. Long pause, and she said, you wouldn't let her use my golf clubs, would you? He said, honey, no, never. She's left-handed. As we try to plan ahead for the new era of clean coal in our state and elsewhere, we need to know, we know some things we don't know. You can help us know other things we don't know. And certainly, as my brief remarks here will reveal, I am among those most in need of tutelage and therefore the most excited person that you have come here from all your different directions and with your expertise. But this has to be, to meet our expectations and the ones Jim Rogers and I were talking about in that phone call, this has to come to some very specific and concrete recommendations for us, because as John just mentioned, the era in which we must appropriately, intelligently regulate and oversee a new realm of energy sources is upon us in Indiana. We intend to accelerate that and bring it here quickly. So let this be a practical meeting of practical people. A friend of mine used to say that attending conferences, was the leisure of the theory class. This we can't afford for this to be one of those. So I hope you have some fun, but I hope it's not too leisurely, and I hope it's not at all theoretically. There are some things we do know, all of us here. The United States needs more energy than now. The only answer to the energy question before the country, particularly this fall, as far as I'm concerned, is all of the above. We need energy from every source. So in Indiana, we are enthusiastic about wind power. We are enthusiastic about solar power, biofuels, geothermal, you name it. We are moving ahead on all fronts that have any application in our part, in our geography, in our longitude and latitude, and so forth. Something else we know is that coal is indispensable, plain and simple. Some may wish it weren't. Some may look forward to a day, distant day when it won't be. But there's an iron and inescapable logic. It is the logic of arithmetic. This is not a matter of policy preference. This is simply a matter of mathematics. For as long as we can see, we must have a significant part of our energy supply from coal. It does not go too far, in my opinion, to say no coal, no country. No country as we have known it. No standard of living as we seek to leave it to our children. And so we must wrestle with the problems of coal. First of all, the health hazards that would come from not finding cleaner and cleaner ways to use it, and that's why we're so excited about the Edwardsport plant, two or three orders of magnitude below in the emissions of the known health hazards, the pollutants that we have been regulating as a country, so much lower than anything we know today. That's essential. A third thing we know realistically is that carbon capture and sequestration is, if not a likelihood, certainly a very strong possibility in our energy future. Again, some might wish it weren't so. Some might wish we knew more, wish that the debate were more scientific, less theological. Some might wish that we had explored all kinds of other options to make sure that this is the best way to charge ratepayers a heck of a lot of money and get a better future. But the reality is, if we're going to move into a clean coal era, we've got to be ready. We've got to know how, because this may well be, I think it will be, the decision society makes. Practical answers to this question are our objective at this meeting. Well, why here and why now? As John made mention, from where we sit here in Indiana, the future not very far away, the clean coal future, and we can't afford for it to be. Our forecasters at Purdue have been telling us for some time that unless we are content to become an energy importing state, we've got to get busy. That's why the Edwardsport plant and other new sources we are developing are so important to us, that we're soon to be more than 3,000 megawatts short, which is a big number in our context, unless we build new capacity, and so we are. I always tell our people, this is a problem we are out to make worse. Worse in the sense that the energy demands of that forecast are based on what I believe are unacceptably low growth rates. We're out to make the Indiana economy one of the strongest around, and it's happening. But a stronger economy will need more, not less, energy, and therefore I feel even more urgency, because I think the next Purdue forecast and the ones after that are going to say that this state's demands are even higher than had been seen recently. And so we intend to lead in every way we can. You are in the state with the world's biggest soy biodiesel plant, now producing at Claypool, Indiana. You are in the state with the nation's second largest wind farm and growing steadily on our western border. You are in the state with the largest, as far as I know, self-sustaining a dairy farm, a magnificent place called Fair Oaks, in which 30,000 cows are producing now all the electricity they need to run the place, soon enough methane that somebody's got to find a way to get it out of there and use it elsewhere, and behind that, ethanol, and many more wonders of the new innovative self-sustaining ethic that is, I think, is our nation's future. And you're in the state that is home to the world's first true biotown, a little town called Reynolds, where once again we are running an experiment to see if that town can convert its, farming town can convert its animal waste to electricity, to methane. In both cases, the answer is yes, and more than is needed for the town and therefore available to move elsewhere. And of course, especially you are in the state that intends to lead in the cleaner, more modern uses of coal. Just speaking provincially, it's a problem that bothers me immensely. It's an irony that in a state sitting squarely inside the Illinois Basin on top of more BTUs than Saudi Arabia has from oil, we Hoosiers, charge our ratepayers $1 billion a year to buy coal from out of state. We do that so it can be burned consistent with the rightful expectations of environmental standards and human health. But we'll be so much stronger state when we can use the coal that's right under our feet and use it at places like Edwardsport in a way that's so much cleaner than what happens today. Right behind Edwardsport comes another exciting possibility. We've been working for some time, and I believe are days away from the arrangements to move forward with a synthetic natural gas plant, also in the southwestern part of our state, to create natural gas for industrial and residential customers in this state. And we expect the consortium that plans to do that to be in front of our Utility Rate Commission by October the 15th. And both these facilities will be capture ready, carbon capture ready. So the challenge and the charge of this meeting is right in front of us right now. We freely admit we don't know what an an appropriate regulatory environment ought to look like, or an appropriate legal environment, statutory framework for the carbon capture era. But it will be on us before we know it, and we are so grateful to you for coming and helping us think through this. I hope you find this as exciting as we do. If my point of view or my observations here are naive, then I freely admit that. But, you know, I think it's exciting. This is one of those rare, seems to me, clean sheet of paper opportunities. And it seems to me there's a great chance here to avoid some of the less, I think, attractive features of the era we have been coming through, to avoid the paralysis and the undue delay. I mean, caution and care and due deliberation, fine, but the extent of the wasted time, wasted dollars, wasted opportunities that has sometimes gone with making sensible adult decisions about energy production in the past really should not apply. It'd be so tragic if it applied to the green energy era. We've just come through a difficult experience here in this state. In the era of $4 gasoline, in the era in which we are trying, I'm told by every politician out there that I hear on the national stage, to free ourselves from oil from unfriendly sources, BP proposed to build a refinery in northwest Indiana to refine Canadian tar, or we used to say tar sands, oil sands, an almost inexhaustible source of the fuel we need from friendly, next-door Canada. Everyone knows that one reason for expensive oil, gasoline, was the bottleneck, the lack of new refining capacity. So here's an answer, right in the bullseye of the biggest national problem we faced all summer and will face for the rest of the near-term future. And we came that close to losing it because of anti-scientific, utterly fallacious, politically motivated in some cases, and certainly aggressive use of all the litigative and regulatory tools available under the current regime of how we regulate these things. It would have been a tragic mistake, and not to mention the thousands and thousands of jobs and $4 billion of investment that this state and its northwest corner badly needs. Now, one would say, well, that's not going to happen now as we move to the new world of green energy, things we can all agree on and that solve so many of the problems or avoid so many of the problems that fossil fuels have created in the past. But I'm not so sure. I read just this week about obstruction of the infrastructure necessary to move wind energy from the place of its generation to the place where somebody might actually use it. And so, in another forum, this very day, here in town, we're talking to people about that question. We intend for Indiana to be a place that approaches that the matter of the transmission of biomass energy or wind energy from remote locations to populated locations more sensibly, more quickly, more efficiently than other places. We must not saddle the new era of green energy with some of the sclerotic features that have been so prominent in the era we've just been coming through. And can we go further than that? Help us think this through. Can we not only limit the obstacles to the rapid adoption of clean coal, of wind power, of biomass, and so forth? Can we, in the new regulatory structure, possibly create incentives so that the market aligns with the societal need for cleaner fuel sources? Help us with the questions of legal liability. And here, my naivete may really show, but it just seems to me that there ought to be a very carefully drawn framework here. You know, whatever CO2 is, as far as I know, it's not a direct threat to human health. If it is, I'm going to summon the state police and order you all to quit breathing for the balance of this meeting. And therefore, for the life of me, I can't see why the burden of proof for anyone who would leave this the sequestration issue open to lawsuit of the kind we've known, it seems to me the burden of proof ought to be on those who would. Maybe I'm missing it, and if so, please help us understand. But you know, who exactly would be the affected class? Everybody in the world? Why shouldn't that be a straightforward matter in which those who would like to build facilities like Edwardsport, like to be involved in the sequestration of the CO2, have less to fear than they would if they were emitting NOx or SO2 or something that we know harms people? Indiana gladly accepts the risks of going first or going early in this area. John rightly reminded us about pioneers and settlers. We've all seen examples of the how quickly and how numerous the arrows can be. But in today's Indiana, we're willing to take that chance. The future, as I said, is not far off for us. Here's an area in which we have, we think, a great chance to lead. We have the will to do so. We need to do so in a way that not only protects the interests of our citizens, but I hope in a way that emboldens others, shows others, our fellow countrymen, how they too can participate, how they too can help our country make the leap that it must from one era to the next. Thank you so much for coming, and we are your attentive students.